Hi, and welcome to all you Wild West history buffs, Indian and Oklahoma Territory enthusiasts, and new folks listening in. I am so glad you are taking the time to listen to Tall Tales Uncovered. Please share this podcast and do a rating review on Apple, Spotify, or whatever platform you're using to help spread our great, true history tales. We were the Wild West, and we need to take the time to celebrate it to keep our history alive. It is such a beautiful fall day. It is so nice for all of us to gather together in this family room with all the doors open. One can just smell fall in the air. Sally, thanks for handing out the coffee, the tea, and water, plus cookies on the table over there. Well, all the chairs are full. Paul, come take this chair by me as you just came in. Boy, it's hard to believe it's been a year since my book, Oklahoma Tall Tales Uncovered, published by History Press, was released. I really enjoyed all my book signings and meeting everyone. The book was very well received. It is available at your local bookstore and Amazon, which gave it a 5-star rating, their highest rating. It is endorsed by the United States Marshals Museum in Fort Smith, Arkansas. It makes a great birthday or Christmas present. Thanks to all of you for your support. I love all your comments and questions as they lead to new tall tales and legends. Tim, you and Sarah both ask about doctors on the Cherokee Strip. A trip to a tall tale indeed. Amazingly, Dr. William P. Nelson of Enid, Oklahoma, wrote a book, The Doctor Was Here, about early doctors in the Cherokee Strip. Many years ago, I lived in the Nelson Edition in Enid. Dr. Nelson lived a few blocks away south of me, in a beautiful, stately, white two-story home with a wheat field next to it. Let us journey back to September 16, 1893, the Cherokee Strip. The largest land run ever of 6.5 million acres for a chance to stake a claim on one of the available 40,160-acre homesteads for either a free farm or a town lot. The strip was 58 miles wide and 228 miles long. A land seeker, male or female, must be the head of a family or 21 years old and a U.S. citizen. The settler must sleep on their claim by March 21, 1894, or lose the claim. After living on the claim for 5 years with improvements, the person would receive the title and own the land, which our pioneers called proving up. 23% of those who registered were women. President Grover Cleveland set the starting time at noon on Saturday, September 16, 1893. Enid's George Rainey, who made the run, commented in his book, The Cherokee Strip, "Saturday, September 16th, came on with a blazing sun. The enormous crowds, people from everywhere, many covered wagons, spring wagons, buggies, buckboards, carts, and surreys, thoroughbreds shipped from distant points, some foolish on bicycles. The railroad cars were jammed with people, and the cars on top of the cars, hanging on the sides, even riding the coal tenders. Look out! A puff of blue smoke from the starting cannon. The race is on! Everything is helter-skelter, pell-mell, the devil for the hindmost. Away they went. Rigs broke down. Horses stumbled and fell. The rolling masses moved on. David Sisaloff, a boy of 9 at the run, gave a first-person account of their family's adventures in his book, Boy Settler in the Cherokee Strip. In a short while, we came to a stout barbed wire that separated Kansas from the Cherokee Strip. The promised land was in sight. Abruptly, trees, orchards, plowed fields, and all roads stopped. There was nothing. Before us spread a great expanse of uncultivated prairie. There were a lot of prairie dogs and their holes. David was warned that the antelope wouldn't get within 2 miles because the settlers had shot at them too much. There were lots of rattlesnakes that could strike 10 feet, big, hairy spiders called tarantulas that could jump, foot-long centipedes, coyotes, and prairie wolves. But of course, to the boy David, it was a grand adventure, seeing wild game running free. Another daily adventure was a fly drive. Each family member would take a towel or flour sack and wave it vigorously towards the door tent opening to shoo the flies out. In his childhood view, it was a vast, uncharted wilderness. Eventually, times got better. The first evidence of prosperity was when David's mother was able to bring home a large tin dishpan, a deep 10-inch baking pan, and a large tin mixing spoon. The run was the largest, wildest happening in American history. 100,000 people erupted in a mad scramble with total bedlam, an attempt to stake a claim. A train that could carry 2,000 would be enveloped by 15,000 people. My picture on the podcast is of the Rock Island train at the state line at the 1893 land run. It's courtesy of the Cherokee Strip Regional Heritage Center here in Enid. The dust was so thick that a heavy wagon pack with supplies and six people raced full speed over an 18-foot cliff to a creek below. Everywhere there was yelling and screaming, the thunder of pounding hooves and clashing wagon wheels. Rainey stated the whole strip was ablaze, literally on fire, charged to the soldiers trying to flush Sooners out, or sparks from locomotives, coyotes, jackrabbits, snakes, antelopes scurrying in all directions. A woman was burned to death trying to save her team of horses. 8 troops of the U.S. Cavalry, 4 infantry units, and 1,000 additional deputy U.S. Marshals were scattered about to control all the clashes between people who claimed the same land and people who had legally staked some of the best lands ahead of time that were called Sooners. Hard times continued for our pioneers. The country was in the financial panic of 1893. Turnips became the staple food and kaffir corn cake. However, wild game was abundant in rabbits, deer, and antelope. Quail were in such abundance that in an afternoon, one could easily have a barrel of quail that could be shipped to a financial market at a fancy price. Sometime during the first night, Charles Hunter came with a printing press loaded on a wagon. The next morning, the first issue of the Daily Wave appeared. Dr. H.B. McKenzie came in a dramatic entrance on the Rock Island from the south. He was on one of those trains that the picture of the podcast depicts. The train was comprised of 40 or more open cattle cars. People were packed in standing positions like a bunch of sardines. When the train got close to Enid, people started jumping off the train as they wanted to stake business and residential lots. However, Enid's first doctor was quite a shocking sight. He was unable to get in the cattle car, so he was hanging on the outside ladder for dear life, with one hand clutching his middle bag and the other hand hanging onto the ladder. He was wearing a high silk hat and a Prince Albert frock tailcoat. In addition, he had a long and flowing beard. It was a white beard. It was so long that it almost touched the ground when he was standing. One could only imagine the image he made when he jumped from the cattle car, rolling on the ground to stake a claim. As others tumbled on the ground, 2 were hurt. Joe Meibergen fractured his ankle, and Zettie Lilly fractured her leg. They were taken to the land office, which was the only building. The doctor had been hanging on the cattle car for 20 miles to stake a lot for his office. So, does he stake a claim or help the 2 people? He spent the entire afternoon caring for 2 patients. Much to his sorrow and personal loss, when he finished helping the 2, all the lots were taken, both business and residential. But his day was not over. He delivered Enid's first baby to start a thriving business. He became a pillar in the community and had large real estate holdings, erecting several new business buildings. He was active in early medical associations, his church, and civic development. The second doctor to arrive, Dr. R.A. Field, made an interest no one could imagine. He rode a very fast horse, staked a claim a few blocks east of the town square. He immediately set to work on a sod house for his family coming from Texas. However, he was taken with severe abdominal pain. They sent for a doctor from Wichita, Kansas as Field got worse. After consultation, it decided surgery was needed. He was placed on a kitchen table for surgery. One can only imagine he placing on a kitchen table for surgery. Dr. Field became the first patient in Enid to be operated on for appendicitis. Thankfully, surgery was successful. Dr. Field was a meticulous dresser, always wearing a newly laundered string linen tie every day. He prospered, even though he told people to set their own fee in accordance with what they could afford and spare. The third doctor, Dr. M.A. Kelso, arrived on a really fast horse as he was the 10th man in line to file a claim, which was a quarter section of land northeast of Enid. He slept on the ground and built a sod house, but attended his medical practice every day. He became one of the territory's most prominent Democrats. He bought the Enid Daily Wave and the weekly Democrat newspapers and combined them into the Wave Democrat. He was a very successful in the medical field, secretary of the First Garfield County Medical Society, and active in the Central Oklahoma Medical Association. The fourth doctor, Dr. C.F. Champion, came on the day of the run with two buggies and two teams of driving ponies. He drove one and led the other. He was equipped to go far, wide, and fast. To see patients, he would go anywhere, at any time, and to any distance. It was said he was very handsome and the youngest of the four doctors. He was a southern gentleman. He dressed the part to perfection, was always immaculately groomed. He developed an extensive practice. He was an excellent baby and children's doctor. The four doctors officed together on the Cherokee Drugstore on the east side of the downtown square. In 1900, these four doctors moved to new offices and laboratories. They obtained an X-ray machine and static electrical apparatus. It was the eighth machine manufactured in 1901. These doctors were forward-thinking. Dr. Champion built a large and imposing brick building at the southeast corner of the downtown square. A poem by Joe Shelby Riley about the four doctors became very popular. Thank you, Linda, for bringing it in today. I'll just read it. The doctors. And next I saw the doctors come, and one did rush a field, and then defy the champion, the surgeon's knife to wield. And then Mackenzie came along and thought he would Kelso, but fortune smiled upon them both. They live as long ago, so doctors live, though people die. Poorest mortals here below, be careful how you take their pills. Be awful, awful slow. Dr. Nielsen concluded, the good physician must have knowledge, but his greatest virtues are kindness and understanding. Who can argue with that? Well, Sarah and Tim, thank you for bringing us this tall tale. Don't forget to rate this podcast on the platform you're using. Please share this tall tale to keep our history alive. Thank you for coming and letting me bend your ear a little bit. Feel free to get a drink and a cookie for the road. I so appreciate everyone listening in today. Thanks, Sam, for the reminder about my book. Oklahoma Tall Tales Uncovered. It is available everywhere in bookstores or on Amazon. Amazon gave it a 5-star rating. And it is endorsed by the U.S. Marshall Museum in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Again, it's a great Christmas or birthday gift. So get your copy today. This is Joe Cummings. See you next time on Tall Tales Uncovered.